Okay, it's Scott Shaper Duffy, all the way from the Worcester Catholic Worker in Massachusetts, and recently released from jail in Georgia for resistance at the School of the Americas. What is the School of the Americas?
School of the Americas is a special training camp at the Fort Benning U.S. Army Military Base in Columbus, Georgia. It was established, I believe, in the 1940s. It is a special training base for Latin American officers and also lower rank soldiers, and it has gained a reputation as being a place where some of the worst human rights abusers of the hemisphere have not only been trained but have been honored, and some of the worst dictators, the man who is accused with ordering the assassination of Oscar Romero as a graduate from the School of the Americas, the people, many of the people that were in the team that assassinated the Jesuit priests and took their brains out of the body and dragged them across the lawn were from School of the Americas. The people that raped and murdered the American missionaries and churchwomen, graduates of the School of the Americas. But more importantly than these connections that make a difference in the States, people that helped kill and torture hundreds of thousands of indigenous people in Guatemala and other countries were graduates of the School of the Americas. So many abusers that activists don't refer to it as the School of the Americas, they refer to it as the School of Assassins. And it's become a lightning rod in the United States of opposition to interventionist policies all over. Activists recognize that there are other bases where people are still trained, and actually if the military closes that one, they'll probably open something similar somewhere else, or maybe even move it to a friendly country. But it's still become a place to say Americans don't agree with this issue. And opposition there began about 11, 12 years ago when Father Roy Bourgeois, a Maronite priest and a Vietnam veteran, did a demonstration there where he climbed up, it was more than 12 years ago, climbed up on a Georgia pine with a sound system which played a tape recording to Latin American troops, a tape recording of Archbishop Oscar Romero's last homily the night before he was assassinated, appealing the soldiers to lay down their arms.
Right.
And he was jailed, and other Vietnam vets and other activists demonstrated in small numbers, and gradually it's become quite a big affair to where there have been some years as many as 6,000 people that have crossed the line onto the property demonstrating. And legal demonstrations of up to 10,000.
And what did you do to get 3 months in Georgia jail?
Well, 3 years ago, there was a turnaround. The crowds had grown so large doing civil disobedience that the Georgia authorities had decided the way to deal with it was to minimize it, not to prosecute people, just drive them off the property. And then they took a different tack 2 years ago where they got very stiff. They didn't just give a ban and bar order. They actually sent a cadre of people to jail, a small number. And then the year before I went, everyone that crossed the line, and the numbers went from 5,000, 6,000, down to only several hundred. Well, about half of them received 3 to 6 months in jail.
Right. And I believe there's an Irish priest presently
in jail. Yes, Father Jim Hines. And this year, he was a co-defendant with us. There was a feeling among the organizers of the SOA watch that very few people probably would cross the line because it looked like pretty much a guarantee of 3 to 6 months in jail because the same judge was still sitting. And they were surprised that 30 more people crossed the line. It was kind of impressive given those possible sentences. And lo and behold, it was absolutely true. You could avoid those sentences by only one way. You could make a promise to the court. You could say you were sorry. And you could apologize. You could apologize to the court, to the people of Columbus, to the U.S. military for what you did, and sign a promise never to go back to the base. And you would get a half year of probation and a fairly sizable fine. And if you refused to do that, it was pretty much for first offenders 3 months in jail, for second offenders 6 months in jail.
And how long have you been doing civil disobedience and risking jail time?
Well, this is about my 40th, 50th arrest. It was fairly far along the line. Although they didn't care there, they only cared about how many you had there. They did send two first offenders to 6 months in jail because the judge got annoyed because they represented themselves and insisted on a full trial.
Oh, well, yeah.
So there was some vindictiveness here and there. And one disabled woman who wanted to go home to care for her sister who was dying of cancer asked for some delay of sentence, and the judge refused that. So the judge was pretty vindictive in various cases. But he gave Father Jim Hines a 6-month sentence.
Right.
And he gave me a 3. Now, one thing that was interesting is the organizers told everyone there that the Georgia jails were particularly bad, and that the judge did give one kind of bourgeois accommodation to the demonstrators, that if you would pay $200 after your sentence, he would allow you to self-report to the federal prisons. Sometime within 6 weeks, you get a letter from the prisons telling you where to report, generally in your area, although not exclusively. And then you'd go to Club Fed, so to speak. And if you refused, you went right into the county jail system. And 6 of us, when we were told that it was, you know, they were bad, and, you know, don't do this. Well, as Catholic workers, that was goading us.
Right.
And our opinion was, if they're bad, that's where we should be.
So your nonviolent resistance has come out of the Catholic worker movement?
Right. And so for us, it was taking the lowest place and committing to.
Just one quick thing?
What? No, I need the keys. Just I have an interview, but no, thank you. Anyway, it was committing to... you know, to being with the lowest place, observing if those conditions were bad for the people of color that were there, they should be bad for everyone. We should see it, write about it, do what we can about it. Turned out to be not the worst jails I've ever seen. The worst jails I ever saw were in Connecticut. But nonetheless, it was a good experience for the 6 of us that did it. And it kept us closer to the Fort Benning. So we wrote letters to the editor of the local paper from jail,
right,
which they published, and we saw some of the local feedback about how people feel in other times of the year about the School of the Americas protests, and how the local people, some of them felt these are hippies that come into our town for a short period of time, do civil disobedience as theater, and then leave, and you know, and so we're actually encouraging this SOA watch next year. As many people as possible who can should just do the time in Georgia.
So, as a Catholic worker, what does that mean? What's your life like?
Well, we shelter my wife and I and other community members in our, it's a community, a lay community of Catholics and non-Catholics as well, that live in simplicity. I'd like to say voluntary poverty, but no American is really poor. And prayer, community, to shelter, feed and clothe the homeless, and to work for peace and justice through education and nonviolent direct action. And that takes several forms, sometimes civil disobedience, sometimes demonstrations, fasts, vigils, walks, all kinds of different events. And the education end is, we publish a newsletter 6 times a year called The Catholic Radical, and we do talks, and, you know, that sort of thing.
And this has sustained a fairly long history of activism for you?
I've been involved in the peace movement since 1978, and when I was arrested demonstrating against the Trident submarine, and I've been a Catholic worker since 1981.
And Dorothy Day died in
1980.
And how's the movement gone since her death?
Well, pundits felt it would collapse without a charismatic leader and so on, but I believe there are roughly twice as many houses now as when Dorothy Day was alive, and it's a fascination point for academics now. There's a lot of books and articles being written. They say, how does a movement exist without a constitution, charismatic founder, structure, any government assistance, or any financial backing, no trusts, no, you know, and by all practical standards, it should be gone. And it's and what's remarkable to people is how much, not only how many houses exist that claim the name Catholic Worker, but how much ideological cohesion there is given that free form. There are differences for sure. Every house adopts how they're going to do things quite individually, but there's still, with nothing to force it, still remarkable cohesion.
And so how do you relate to other communities?
Well, we get together as Catholic workers periodically. We have had gatherings in our city, which drew people from up to 20 different communities. There have been gatherings in Philadelphia, which we've attended, and we went to a national gathering in Nevada, where over 100, maybe 80 Catholic worker communities gathered. That one was torture for me, because just before I arrived, I got laryngitis and couldn't say a word. no one I know remembers me even being there. They said, you weren't at that gathering. And so it's kind of an evil sort of thing. But, you know, so we do get together. We got together with Catholic workers in upstate New York. And this one was kind of interesting. We went to they got a camp that for free, the Albany Catholic Worker, that we could all go to. And people from all the way down to North Carolina came, and it was really a nice place. It had a hot tub and a pool, and it was very, you know, and it didn't cost us anything, and it was really great. And at one point, what's his name, Patrick O'Neill, comes up to me, and he found a flyer. The place is a gay retreat center, and they normally have close-off weekends to introduce everyone for attending. Yeah, that's the opener. You can't be in any of the other workshops unless you attend the close-off weekend. And there was another weekend on exploratory masturbation, and you know, there was all these different things. It was all you know, it was really kind of like wild out there, you know. A touchy-feely gay weekend, you're getting into your feelings. It was like, this is where the camp we were all at. It was kind of unusual.
So the Catholic Worker receives like a kind of solidarity and support from all sorts of sources. Huh?
Oh yeah, we go all the way from people from, let's say, the Communist Party, might be associated with us for various things, and on the other end, somebody like William F. Buckley. Very conservative American columnist. He sent $500 to our house once because he admires the fact that we don't take aid from the federal government. And you could draw from people from, you know, just about all stripes, and that's kind of it's kind of an interesting thing. And
what aspects of the Catholic Worker kind of nourishes long-term activism and work with the poor?
There are many aspects that that nourish it, but I would say the strong sense of community and the freedom that exists in it, the creativity and freedom to define the life. Let's say you're in a period of time where you're more interested in international issues, more interested in local issues happening in your school, ROTC, JROTC in your schools, or sexism or racism. Those issues, you're defined by the individual community you're in. We're taking this up. We're working on this. We're working on pesticides in the lake. You know, you can do that. When you work in a company or for a corporation or in a religious order, they've got constitutions and a definition, and there's a structure, and there's people all above. And you could be paralyzed. And even things as simple as your social life, like I like to go mountain climbing once in a while. I don't do it very often. But a friend of mine that went with me when I was in college, he works for Microsoft. He makes $90,000 a year. He has a pretty good living. He collects cars for a hobby. And I call this friend periodically now to go mountain climbing, and his answer is always the same. I can't do it. I've got to work. And, in my community, I could, within certain limits, say to people, I think I need to go mountain climbing next Thursday, and bang, I'm gone. You know, and that's sustaining. That's empowering, liberating.
So you're heading up to Derry this week down in the north of Ireland to...
Not to go mountain climbing.
Not to go mountain climbing, but to confront the Raytheon.
Yeah, Raytheon is the second largest military contractor in the United States, I believe, in the world. And we've been demonstrating against them in our state. They're the largest single employer in Massachusetts for the last 5 years. And what got us going is they had an article in the paper when President Clinton was talking about bombing Iraq, and it says Raytheon hopes to get boom out of attacks on Iraq. And it was an article with the Raytheon executive saying they were hoping to get a big burst, and they obviously felt they were so safe from protests that they could say something brazenly offensive. So we started demonstrating at their place, and we've done 6 acts of civil disobedience and subpoenaed them and whatever. And we've given them a good run. Now, whenever we show up for anything, they have lots of police cars there and whatever. We can draw lots of attention just by being there. Mm-hmm. They're terrified of us. It's really kind of funny.
Yeah, I noticed some graffiti in Derry after Raytheon equipment shot down a British tornado and friendly fire incident was with patriots like Raytheon who needs enemies.
Well, Raytheon helps make the cruise missile, too, and 3 cruise missiles landed in Iran. Wow. One of them killed a 12-year-old and a number of other civilians. 2 cruise missiles landed in Afghanistan. And 1 cruise missile killed 12 Syrians on the border of Iraq and Afghanistan. And we like to look at this in the smart bomb hole, you know, that mythology of the smart bomb. Is, you know, they're pretty smart. They land in the general region of the globe. in the same country.
How do you feel that Nobel Peace Prize laureates David Trimble and John Hume opened Raytheon and welcomed them, saying it was part, a significant part of the Northern Ireland peace process?
Well, I have great love and affection and admiration for Mairead Maguire, but I begin to wonder, should myself or any of other great peacemakers alike I know, like Kieran O'Reilly, ever get offered the Nobel Peace Prize, we might have to turn it down because of people like Henry Kissinger, Yasser Arafat, Yitzhak Rabin, and David Trimble, having received it and having made it sort of a, you know, kind of a tarnished crown. Yeah, devalued it quite a bit. Henry Kissinger, that's hard to believe. How'd they ever choke that down? I don't know. And, you know, so does it surprise me who they give it to next time? I don't know.
Yeah. And what's your take on Irish complicity in the last war effort after being here for 2 days?
Well, you know, I think, unfortunately, a lot of people forget their own sufferings and their own backgrounds, and, you know, they turn around and don't really remember, gee, we were victims of, you know, the draft, for instance, in World War I. That was a big issue for the Irish being taken to go to fight in a pointless, stupid war. And, you know, and you start to get comfortable economic situations, and you start to see big corporations from the States here, and you don't want to, you know, ruffle the waters. And even though most people in Ireland were against the war, and the church said, you know, it's not legal and it's against the Constitution, it doesn't matter. But you've got things like Japan, for instance. U.S. imposed a pacifist constitution on them. And then the U.S. now is breaking their arms to get them to commit troops into various places in the world. And the same thing with Germany. It's sad that people forget. I mean, Thomas Jefferson said we need a revolution every generation to remind people of where they need to be and what their priorities need to be.
And what's your take on the pit stop for Ashair's disarmament of a U.S. Navy warplane at Shannon in January?
Well, I think that was, first of all, a clever name. And I also think that one time I was in Washington, D.C., and I was walking down the street, and there was a toy gun on the street, and it was at night. I didn't see anybody around. I picked it up, and I just broke it.
Yeah.
A lot of people in the neighborhood have been killed and shot with guns and whatever, and I just, this has got to go. Kid came out of nowhere and said, you broke my gun, and he wanted me to buy him another one. And I refused, and we went back and forth. Finally, he says, I'm calling my dad. And his father came out, and his father talked to me, and I explained to him what it was. And his father lifted up his shirt. He had a huge wound from Vietnam. He says, they sent me to Vietnam to kill people that never did anything to me. And he says, I think you were right, and such and such, and, you know. So I think that sometimes it becomes clear to us that, you know, some things are, you know, they're bad, and they've got to be destroyed.
And are you surprised to see Kieran O'Reilly still active after 10 years?
Well, most people think he was a shooting star in the States, and they were pretty surprised. It's true. It is true that he's, you know, keeping it going. We just try to know if he's, you know, they have an expression in the States when you're running out of gas that you're just going on fumes. You know, we don't know. It may be that these are the last days. but we are hopeful that, you know, he's still got a little oomph in him. We understand that it was hard for him to keep up with the young people running across the runway, but, you know, there may be a few more. He may have a few miles yet in him.
That's beautiful.
You brought that on yourself.